Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
Derek, it's February.
It is. Oh, it is.
Middle of February. Mm-hmm. We're getting busy. Things are about to get really busy. Yeah. I mean, it's been busy, but it's going to get busier this weekend. Family Day weekend here in Canada.
Yes.
In Ontario, anyway. Is it all across? And we got somebody over here. Yeah. Playing with their squeaky bear.
Occasionally during the recording, you're going to hear a squeaky toy going off because our HR department is in here playing with her squeaky toy.
Yes. Athena's down here playing with her toys. We got Family Day this coming weekend. Got a bunch of stuff to do around here. The weekend after is Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show. The weekend after that is Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Going to be busy.
And then it's March.
Yep.
That fast. It's March already. Quarter of the way through.
Yeah. I want to hear the recording afterwards. I want to see how well it shows up.
How many squeaks do you hear?
They may not even hear it.
Well, at least she doesn't have her green squeaky ball, because that is loud.
Yeah.
Like, if we're watching TV and she starts mowing on that thing.
Yeah.
I've actually got to stop and take it away because you can't hear the TV.
It's too loud. I can't hear the TV.
Yeah. So, no, busy. Family Day. You're going camping?
Yes, we are. So I have a winter tent that I haven't managed to use yet because it's winters have been busy so far. But anyways, it's been set up in my backyard for like 2 weeks now. I'd occasionally go out and light a fire and heat things up and you know, set it out because I haven't used it before. So I've been doing various things, setting it up and putting places to hang, you know, wet clothes because it's a brand new tent. It's never been used. And, so it's, I think we're set up, ready to go. I got squeak. She's distracting me. Anyways, we burned the stove a couple times and yada yada. So it's ready to go. We're all packed. We're semi-packed up now, ready for this Friday. So
you're doing a 4-day weekend?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 nights.
And then coming home the Monday.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it four days because we're going to be getting there after dark because we both
still
work
a day.
Late. Yeah. We're going to show up Friday night, set up under headlamps.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
So it's not interior.
I'll give you a hint. Mm-hmm. If you turn your car the other way.
Headlamps.
You can set it up by headlight.
I was going to say that, and I avoided saying that because I didn't want to say I was car camping.
Ah.
But yeah.
So, I don't think your kids have been backcountry camping yet, have they?
Not yet. So I tried to sell them on it, and certain people are a little too nervous to do that just yet. And we couldn't do it on Friday because don't want to be hiking in the dark. So we'd have to leave first thing Saturday morning type thing. So we decided, okay, well, we're testing out the new tent and so on. And even though I've gone winter camping a couple times, they're only used to car camping, not interior. So.
Right.
Was it? I was reading something the other day. Stop calling it wild camping. It's like, I don't know where I read that, but people.
Who calls
it
wild camping?
I don't know. Americans do, I think.
Yeah.
Australians and Americans? I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know. Somebody's going to yell at me. It's not us. Anyways,
not us.
I call it backcountry camping because backcountry is what we do when we canoe camp in the summer because we're backcountry camping. We're not on we're on designated sites, but we're off. We're not car camping.
Car camping is front country camping.
Yeah. Car camping, front country, and then backcountry
glamping.
Camping. Glamping. Yeah. So, but yeah, we're all excited. We've been,
Supposed to be some good snowfall.
Yes, getting a snowfall in the next couple of days.
February always hits the
and
snow.
So Saturday and Sunday, lots of snow. Low of minus 24 to 26 on the Sunday night. So that's exciting. We'll see how that goes. So yeah, and so Siobhan was cooking pancakes on the weekend and freezing them, and so we don't have to cook.
Oh, so much easier just to reheat stuff when you're winter camping.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I've been packing away leftovers for the last 2 or 3 weeks pastas and butter chicken and whatever. So
remember that stew we had 3 weeks ago that nobody liked?
Yes.
Surprise!
So Siobhan said that because I had made a broccoli orzo chicken pasta thing. And I had let it boil too long because I forgot about it. And so she's like, I can't even tell what kind of pasta you used. It's like, it's orzo. I don't know what your problem is. But it's a greenish white paste with chunks of chicken.
What for dinner? Chicken paste. Chicken and glue.
Yeah. So that pasta was way overboiled.
Yeah, I've never done that.
Overboiled pasta?
Yep, never. Ever.
Because you don't make it?
Ever. Oh, I make pasta a lot. Oh. I've never. Honest. True. True.
So, yeah. So, that's one of the options. Lots of frozen food.
Who wants paste? Oh, yes!
Fish paste in a tube.
Oh, there you go. Oh, speaking of fish paste in a tube, daughter sent pictures from her latest little jaunt in Japan.
Adventure in Japan.
There's a seal rehabilitation center she went to. And I guess when seals get injured, they bring them there and they nurse them back to health and stuff. And one, excuse me, that can't be released back into the wild. Like there's one that's got one eye now.
Oh, okay.
And there's other issues, missing a flipper or something like that. And they just released to the wild. They're just going to die anyway. Mm-hmm. So they keep them there, rehabilitate them, and use them for educational purposes. And, she sent pictures of her next to the seal. And when they're laying on land, like we had the conversation earlier where you see them in the water and they're just graceful. They're fast and skinny, on a dime. And then when they get on land, they look like an Italian sausage with eyes and a nose.
Like a cartoon.
Yeah. It's like, really? You're the grace that I just saw out in the water?
You're gray lightning that I just saw spin past me?
Yeah. You look like a giant tube of meat with a raccoon face on the front. Ladies and gentlemen, the seal.
I remember scuba diving once off San Diego, California, and we had a couple, I don't know what kind of seals they would have been, but they were gray, and they were very aggressive. Like, they never touched us, but we were, like, kind of, we cut the dive short because this thing kept coming at us and turning at the last second, like you're being swooped by a seagull
His buddies were probably over in the kelp bed watching.
Yeah. But we're like,
did you feel blanched?
I don't know what this thing's trying to do, but he's like trying to scare us off or he's mad at us. I don't know what's going on.
Trying to win a bet.
Maybe. He could have been just playing for all we know, but I've never swam with a seal before.
Or since.
Yes, or since. So it's like, whoa, okay, we're done.
Going to be a lot of getting ready for stuff. And February always just seems to be so busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything happens. It's mid-February on. It just, that's when everything picks up. And February late last few years seems to be when all the big snow hits too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this is the first family day weekend in 5 years, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Or something that we haven't been camping.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
Got too many other things to do. Tracy's working, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So
I might go for a paddle on the...
Oh, yeah?
Maybe the Monday or something. Or in the deep snow.
Where are you going to find open water? Like you'd have to...
So if you drive to the end of my street...
But Duffin's Creek
and then
is...
you keep on going, you can go one of two places.
On Lake Ontario.
Lake Ontario or Duffin's Creek. Duffin's Creek's going to be frozen.
Yeah, it's frozen over.
But Lake Ontario, John Brower went kayaking there on the weekend.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it was nice and calm.
Hmm.
So, yeah, if the winds are calm and stuff like that, it's a nice paddle up the shore. Yeah. And we don't go like mile out. You're, you know, maybe
100
meters offshore or whatever, you know, and just do a nice little doodly-doo around, then back. You get out for an hour or two and do some paddling and get away from the TV and the noise of the having to do work around the house. And,
excellent.
That's why they invented canoe paddling. Why do you have a canoe and a kayak? So I got two options to get out of housework. That's why.
Got something to go to. Gotta go.
Oh, my kayak friends are going today, and they've invited me. Oh, my canoeing friends are going, and they've invited me. Oh, no, Derek's going to let me try his stand-up paddleboard. He's invited me. Our front lawn hasn't been mowed in 6 years. Awesome.
It works. It all works.
It all works out. Whatever. That paddling, speaking of, because, you know, we are a paddling show, that paddling weekend paddling project I'm doing this summer.
Yes.
I've started planning it out. I've already got, like, just over 30 different rivers and...
Oh, do you?
Mostly right rivers. It seems it's mostly rivers that I've been writing down on my list. There's a couple of lakes, but mostly rivers on my list that I'm going to check out. And there's a couple that I've thought about looking at in New York State and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people right now saying, why are you going to go across the border?
Oh, yeah.
Because I can. I pick up my new passport this week.
Oh, there you
go. See? So might as well get use out of it. So I'm contemplating maybe hitting a couple spots just over the border there.
Okay.
Right? So.
So what canal is it that John did 2 or 3 years
Erie?
Ago?
No, not the.
How long ago was that? That was.
That was a few years ago now.
Yeah. The Erie Canal? That sounded really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Even all the,
there were a couple iffy spots that
you
get.
Yeah, a couple crackheaded counters and.
Yeah. But still, even still, there's.
Yeah, if you're careful. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, use your melon. If you're not comfortable, move on.
Because there's the Finger Lakes. There's a lot of nice lakes down. Like I've seen a lot of these lakes by car or by motorcycle and stuff like that. So I was down into Lake George, and there's a bike show down there. And so I've seen a lot of these places. It's like I keep driving by them. It's like, I really want to paddle that water.
Right? You can tell a real paddler that every body of water they drive by.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you that'd be a good place
to go. Look how green it is on the shore.
Yeah, that's all marsh.
Look how smooth that lake is.
Yeah, I wonder if there's moose in that lake. I wonder what the fish are like in that lake.
What's the conservation area down by Mikey that we read about?
Point, Long Point.
No, it was an internal marshy area.
Oh, is that the Amazon of Canada? The rainforest? Yeah.
I want to go see that.
That's on my list.
Is it?
Yep.
Right on.
Oh, I don't have my list with me. I've got just over 30 different water bodies to check out.
Right on.
I'm going to add some more. So, yeah, this is going to be a lot. And I've got a bunch of people that want to join up for day trips.
I definitely want to go. I want to see that Amazon of whatever.
Amazon of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ontario. Or,
yeah, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's supposed to be really cool. So, definitely going to check that one out in the summer. But yeah, see about a couple of them across to make a couple of sojourns across the states and check them out. Cause there's a few things in Michigan I want to try out and whatnot too. So do some more little trips over that way. Should be good.
Oftentimes when it comes to paddling destinations, it's almost like, I've got some coworkers and they did a European tour of film the locations. Right. And I'm thinking, I'd love to do a paddle trip where I drop in and see a bunch of paddling destinations that I've seen in film. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it just, there's a lot of these different locations where they're on the water, they're doing something and it's like, oh, I want to paddle there. And so you could you can pick a bunch of movies and you go and see where they filmed it and paddle the waters where they filmed it.
Star I don't know. Wars, Star Trek.
Deliverance.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, that'd be kind of cool to do.
It would be, yeah. Paddle destination vacation tour, like movie tour.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be very interesting. Hmm.
Yeah, there'd be some pretty cool spots to check out, too. And it depends what kind of movies you're in. You're into
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Hmm.
I've been looking online for interior flatwater paddling trips in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of whitewater paddling you can do in the interior.
I work with a few people that they've spent a lot of time going on trips down to Mexico doing some of these unique, a lot of them are
a lot of them on the coast. Trips.
Yes. So there's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And of course you have to be careful. So it's best if you go with, so one of the girls that she's done a lot of this, she will, she'll join up with I want to say guided tour, but it's not really, it's a, what do you call it? Catered, guided, something like that. It's so it's a planned trip, and she's just joining a group of like 20 other people.
Okay.
And so they'll show up, and she just has to pick her rivers, because down in Mexico, there's a lot of, you find an outfitter, and the outfitter is running group tours through a lot of these areas, and she just says, oh, I want to go to this place now. So she doesn't do that anymore. She's got kids now, but she used to do that a lot back in the day. So it was very interesting to hear about her journeys down through Mexico and the States and whatnot, doing a lot of whitewater trips. That's what she was into. She was doing whitewater.
Well, that's yeah, when you start looking is, hey, whitewater.
Where's the flat water ones?
I just want to go down a nice meandering river and just chill out.
Exactly.
You know, there doesn't seem to be as much as of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that'd be kind of, yeah, all these places you can just check out on the internet. That's the one good thing about the internet. You just Google different places. Go on.
Endless information at your fingertips. It's incredible.
Yeah. Just check it all out.
Yeah. I remember we grew up with paper and paper maps.
The encyclopedia.
Encyclopedias. And eventually we got into these bulletin boards on online bulletin boards, BBBs or whatever.
BBS.
So it's... We've come a long way.
Right.
So, but yeah, now it's the world's at our fingertips. It was so easy to research for a trip these days with Google Maps and satellite views and so on. It's like, oh, look at this. And so I still, if I was going to an unknown area, I would bring a topo map. But like with canoe routes map for certain parks and some satellite topographical, like you can make Google do topographical. So you can say, hey, look at that. Those lines are far apart, so it's not that steep there. I could traverse this area to get to this area because I want to leave this lake and go to that hidden lake and so on.
Plus, there's so many different places now that you can just contact for information too, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I want to go to this area. I'm going to be in this town. What's near there that I can paddle?
Facebook groups and all that can help you out, give you information and stuff. Yeah. And it's awesome. You know, that's the one thing I do say about the paddling community is when you need information about something.
They're open and giving, yeah.
There's so many people there willing to
It's their passion. To help out, right? And so they want to help out other people with the same passion.
Yeah. So, got a couple of things to talk about tonight. Just to sort of shift gears here. Speaking about sharing and people with passion. I'm going to talk about Kevin Callan and his passion.
Yep.
The passion of Kevin. Join Kevin Callan in a Voyager canoe for 5 days on Lake Superior. So this is from his Explore blog this week.
Yes.
I saw this one out there and I'm thinking, number one, where they're going is pretty cool.
It's amazing.
Who they're going with are really good. I did a 2 years, yes, 2 years ago in October, my October trip.
Oh, yes, you did. I went up Lake Superior.
Superior and naturally Superior, David Wells, he organized to have me driven up the Michipicoten River.
Oh, okay.
Dropped me off, and then I paddled all the way back down to Superior. They're right on the mouth of the Michipicoten River on Lake Superior. And then, yeah, I just showed up back at his place, loaded all my stuff back on my truck, and off I went. It was an awesome day of paddling. It is a spectacularly beautiful area. Love to go back. So... Kevin Callan is going to be doing this Voyager canoe trip, looking for people to sign up. This is going to be an amazing trip. Come join me for a Voyager canoe journey along the north shore of Lake Superior. David Wells of Naturally Superior and Trans-Canada Trail have partnered up to create a 5-day wilderness water trail canoe trip along the rugged Lake Superior Highlands Conservation Reserve. The trip is from July 4th to 9th, 2025.
So do you know if they're full yet?
I don't know that they're full yet.
So this is a one-off trip, it sounds like. It's and you're going by Voyager Canoe. What is it? I think we saw that it's like 10 to 12 people or 12 to 14?
Yeah, they say 12 to 14. Some say up nine. Some of their trips say nine. Some of their say up to 14.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think, though, like with guides and and all of that. So July 1st is a Tuesday, and that's a holiday. So you might as well just take that whole week off. The 4th to the 9th is a Friday to a Wednesday. Yeah, just take the full 2 weeks off, have some fun, do a little bit more paddling afterwards. 55-kilometer round-trip journey from Naturally Superior Adventures Paddling Center at the mouth of the Michipicoten River, and it's going to be awesome, he says. Section of Superior we are paddling is an absolute oasis, complete with Caribbean-like beaches, picture-perfect campsites, rugged rock shorelines, and turquoise-colored water. Wildlife sightings are common, and you'll most likely catch a lake trout for lunch just by dangling a fishing line over the side of the canoe. 14 people trolling at the same time. What could go wrong? We're also paddling in style with a 36-foot, 11-meter Voyager canoe. It's fast, stable, suitable for trippers of all ages and skill sets. Trip includes meals and snacks. Amazing wilderness cuisine is Naturally Superior's expertise. Top-notch group camp gear. There will also be two professional guides to handle all the details and safety. And, of course, I'll be tagging along to tell a few tales of my wilderness travels and share a few tips and tricks on how to be a happy camper. Highlight is the stopover at Denison Falls, accessible only by water.
Oh, okay.
This place has been on my bucket list ever since I first watched Bill Mason's movie Water Walker. There's a classic scene in the film where Mason stops to camp and paint. I absolutely love that scene. End of the scenery. I know exactly because I've only seen Water Walker probably 30 times, plus or minus plus 10. If you've never seen Water Walker by Bill Mason, go on the Film Board of Canada site and just put in Bill Mason in search, and it comes up with all his films. Definitely watch Water Walker. You won't feel like you've wasted your time. It's pretty cool.
It's the I found it very interesting. Like he's got this, like you see people mounting GoPros on your helmets and so on. So he's got like a football style helmet, and he's got this looks like an 8mm film camera, and it's like
welded to the side.
He's got 30 pounds of camera gear attached to his skull.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what if you want point of view paddling, that's what you got to do, right?
Back in the day, it was
interesting to see that part of it.
Denison Falls, a 40-meter cascade born from the tributaries of the Dog River, plunges over glassy bedrock edged with boreal moss and pine and ends with a ghostly mist bellowing up as the river water hits the cold liquid of Lake Superior. I can't wait to camp there. Just a note, this trip being offered in partnership with TransCanada Trail, 18% of the trip fees goes towards supporting the organization's ongoing development and stewardship of the world's longest network of recreational trails. I promise not to duplicate my nightly stories around the campsite, and I guarantee a paddling experience of a lifetime along one of the most majestic masterpieces nature has ever created. That sounds like it'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You should go on it.
I would love to. I just don't know if I can
get the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool. That's, you know what? I paddled up that way. I've never been as far up as Denison Falls. But yeah, I've got to agree with Kevin. Like, that's just, if you watch the movie Water Walker, just that whole area up there is just like phenomenal. But you've got to have days booked in just in case for wind.
Exactly. So Superior is bad for that. Like I only paddled Superior once, but I've heard you tell stories and I've driven past it lots, and it's like, it's a big lake. It creates big waves. It's
well, there's models that show how waves that start, tiny waves that start on the west side of the lake, end up coming across and they get bigger and bigger. So by the time they're hitting the east side, and that's where I always am.
Nemoosh Provincial Park is Denison Falls.
That's apparently where it's ending, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's on the backside of the Dog Skull in Superior.
Yep.
Near Wawa. Past Wawa.
Past Wawa, yeah.
Hmm.
But you can't get there unless you...
Yeah, there's no roads.
Yep. It's part of the water trail
part.
Very
isolated. Hmm.
Well, that's one of the things I think Bill Mason liked about it is that it was isolated.
Yeah.
There wasn't all the people zipping through and around and you had to work to get there. But the reward was well worth it.
Oh, right? There's a... There you go. Here's a video. This is Denison Falls.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It,
there's people on that video.
There's people.
So, for more information, go to naturallysuperior.com/trips/Denison Falls by Voyager Canoe. Or just go to naturallysuperior.com. Click the paddle tab at the top. Choose 36-foot Voyager canoe trips. Scroll down to Lake Superior Water Trail, Denison Falls by Voyager Canoe. Click on it, and it's got all the information. I got to feel something like this might fill up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because there's a lot of people that love to be out for 5 days with Kevin Callan.
It's very tempting, even though it's Kevin Callan.
Well, he posted his blog for the week saying, you know, hey, here's what I'm doing. And I said, knowing my relationship with Lake Superior, I think I'll just stay home.
Yeah, the weather would be nicer if you stay home.
Yeah, it'll be nicer for everybody if I just stay home. You're welcome. Yeah, that'd be cool to do a Voyager canoe through there.
And because it's a, what, 36 well,
a lot of,
feet?
It's yeah, there's a lot of history boat, so for Voyagers up through there too, right?
There is. The back of the fur trade days. But with a watercraft that big, it can be fairly stable in rougher waters.
And the bonus with this? No portaging.
Yes. So I when you first mentioned this to me, I think that was my first question. So are they going to have to portage this? Because if you are on it coming out of Georgian Bay behind Phillip Edward Island, there's a takeout where you either paddle all the way around this peninsula that goes out into the lake, or you jump over the peninsula. And if you're in that area, you can see the star painted on the rock, you know, 200-300 years ago, and you can see the old Voyager Trail where they used to take the canoe out. And so that I went there with Mike Burns and we circled Phillip Edward Island, and it was, I don't know that I'd want to be hauling a giant canoe over
and the gear.
Canoe and the gear. Because if you ever was, I didn't see it at the new canoe museum, but the old canoe museum, they have a display of Voyagers display with the canoe laying upside down with a blanket over to keep the rain off you. And so it showed the setup, but it also showed the giant wooden boxes you had to carry on your back.
Yep.
It's like, wow. And this is what these guys did for a living every summer.
And they would have to do it quickly, too.
Yes.
You weren't just dawdling along those
portages. No, this is working. Yeah. This is a working route. And so you're not, like, smelling the flowers. You're like, let's go.
No, you're smelling each other because you're wearing the bear grease.
Yeah. Yes.
Bug retardant stuff, so, right?
That's another thing that I was like, but back in the day, that's how you kept the black flies and mosquitoes off you, is you'd cover your skin in bear grease because the bugs didn't want to get stuck to your skin.
I think there comes a point where if that is what you're doing, then there comes a point where you just don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
How dirty and grimy.
Yeah, you're done.
When I first started canoe, I can remember when I first started canoe tripping, it was just like, okay, I'm going to have a rinse off, and I'm going to make sure I got no bug spray on me, and I'm going to make sure, clean. Not clean, but, you know.
I don't want to be fair looking. I don't want to get my sleeping bag all dirty.
Oh, I stink after two days. I got to have a little bath in the lake or something. Or anymore. When did you have a bath? 2 weeks ago.
I haven't had a bath all summer.
Hey, man, is that a chipmunk in my beard?
I fell into the lake a month ago. I think that's good enough.
Yeah, I fell in the lake the other day. Yeah, that works.
I can imagine. Yeah. Okay, well, it's dark, so you're going to bed because it's dark because you're going to have a big day tomorrow. But, okay, well, going to go to bed. You're going to lay out on the rocks.
It's not like you're changing into pajamas.
Yeah, I'm going to slather some extra bear grease on me so the bugs don't eat me while I try and sleep. And
yeah, the hygiene.
Yeah, it'd be nasty, right?
Yeah. I don't think the majority of people. I think that would be a big turn. If you were to go back in time,
that would be a big adjustment.
And they say, hey, all you got to do is hang out on the trip. You don't need to paddle or anything. Yeah. Carry gear. You just, I think that would be the big thing is everybody you talk to, just stinks.
Exactly. And so just
dude, you need a mint?
Everything you do just stinks.
Right?
And like even in modern times you can think about it as like you get on a subway and it's just like, did somebody poop here? What's going on? What's that smell?
Oh, the hot summer August on the subway.
Now imagine back in the day where you're not going to be necessarily that clean because you don't want to bathe too much because you want to, you're going to run out of bear grease if you keep washing it off. And I don't know. I'd like to talk to somebody to get some truth to fact about what was hygiene like back then?
Hygiene? I don't know what you mean by hygiene.
Well, it also makes you wonder how people procreated because if you're going to be that dirty, how did they have babies?
Probably the same way we have babies today, Derek.
I know, but I think...
Hang on, let me order you this book off of Amazon.
Without being graphical, I think you get my point.
Yeah, back in the day, buddy. Ugh. Back in the day. I'll take my showers any day. But, no, like I say, I mean, now, going on a canoe trip, and whatever. I stink.
Yeah, but you're still 100% cleaner than what they were back in the Voyager days, I imagine.
Oh, I'm sure. Anyway, naturallysuperior.com under their trip section. Check for Denison Falls by Voyager Canoe and check it out. I think it'd be kind of interesting to join Kevin Callan. And if you do join Kevin Callan on this trip,
tell us about it.
Tell us about it and just make sure you're razzing Kevin all the time on behalf of Paddling Adventures Radio.
Exactly.
not something we always get into, racing and stuff like that, but there's been a rule change. I came across this article on SUP Connect website, stand-up paddleboards. There's been a rule change for junior stand-up paddleboard racers. In a sweeping move aimed at leveling the playing field and reducing the financial burden on junior competitors, the International Canoe Federation has introduced a new rule mandating that all junior participants at the World Championships must race on a standardized one-design ICF stand-up paddleboard, 14 feet long. By removing expensive equipment considerations, the ICF hopes to lower barriers to entry and to make competitive paddling more accessible to a diverse range of young athletes.
Well, that makes sense because major competitions, if you're experienced and you're deep into your sport, you're going to have sponsors, a lot of money. Well, you hope for a lot of money, but not everybody gets big sponsors. But if you are at that level, you're going to have some money to back you up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people getting into the sport, they get what they can, and somebody else has, somehow managed to get a sponsor, or they have,
Well, look at some of the races that are like the Muskoka X race in
Oh, Huntsville. It's so diverse. You get
these guys that with the racing canoes that, they're jumping in that canoe
flying
as it's hitting the water at the end, and they're out of that canoe as they're hauling it up the shores.
And other people are in other a Grumman. Guys,
yeah, they're in a Grumman. How much does that weigh? 80 pounds. What does yours weigh? 5. I pick it up under one arm and run while carrying my teammate on my back.
Exactly.
Still lighter than your canoe. On its face, this rule could be heralded as a positive step forward for the sport, particularly for those who struggle to keep pace with skyrocketing equipment costs. For parents and juniors already juggling travel and training expenses, their reassurance that they can simply pack their paddles and not incur high transport fees for large boards can be a relief.
It would be.
It simplifies logistics, reduces shipping nightmares, helps ensure that very young athlete has an equal opportunity on race day, regardless of their financial resources. On paper, it sounds like a fantastic idea.
It does, if the equipment is maintained properly and cleaned properly. Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, when McKenzie was playing rep hockey. Some people have like $1,000 skates. Other people, they can just afford the skates from your local Canadian Tire for $50.
Or Value Village used skates.
Yeah, used skates, something like that, right? Yet for all its good intentions, the regulation has not come without controversy. Some seasoned junior paddles, including competitor Soren Preston, have decided to withdraw from future ICF events rather than switch to a mandated board. At first glance, this might seem as an overreaction to a rule rooted in fairness and accessibility. However, it highlights an important concern. Competitive stand-up paddling is not just about leveling the financial playing field. It is also about expertise, brand relationships, and equipment familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
Many junior athletes develop a sense of confidence and identity with their chosen boards, fine-tuning their performance over countless hours of training.
Custom paint jobs and some sponsorship. If you're if you're good at the competition, then some paddleboard maker is going to say, "We want you to paddle our board,"
and you get used to that board.
Exactly. Yeah.
The way it feels, the way it balances, everything, and then all of a sudden, now you've got to go to a Costco special.
Yeah, and not just that. So maybe you've got some custom waxes to help it, you know, more streamlined, and you've cleaned it up and you have some special custom tie down points or some special foot pads. So if you have to go to the generic, suddenly it's like, oh, this is going to be weird. I'm going to have to get out and paddle this for a day or two to make sure I can handle it properly because it's going to be weird or different.
Yeah. I can see both sides of this. Like, let's get more people into it and standard side. But then, these other people that have been in it for a few years have...
And if you have a brand sponsor for your paddleboard and you're going to be using a generic, that could be a violation of your sponsorship agreement, right?
And it could also mean the difference between you going to various events because now all of a sudden that sponsorship money's gone.
Exactly.
And that's what you were relying on to, you know, you get an F1 guy, he gets... Ferrari takes away his car.
You have a Pinto today.
Congratulations. You're in a Pinto.
Careful you don't get it from behind.
For those who have grown attached to their personal setups and often rely on specific board geometry to maximize their stroke techniques, being asked to adjust to a one-size-fits-all solution can feel like a loss of control. The shift may also impede valuable equipment testing, sponsored collaborations, and the broader culture of innovation that has historically driven the stand-up paddleboard industry forward.
Hmm.
Standardized board could inadvertently disadvantage taller or heavier paddlers.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Right? Or those that have refined paddling styles specific to certain board dimensions. Although the 14-foot design aims for broad suitability, it inevitably overlooks individual preference and biomechanical nuances. Though defenders of the rule would argue this is precisely what makes it a fairer standard. Hmm. So when I used to rock climb back in the day, we would do these routes, and I would watch somebody that was like 5 feet.
Like scurry right up the rock.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And me at 6'1". I'm like cramping in to try to get that thing.
Because
there is nothing beyond, like, in my reach, I had to pull my arm in or my leg.
Oh, you're,
because it was, you know, trying to find good spots.
Yeah.
I was too tall. But then there's the other ones where, oh, everything is perfect. And I'm scooting up like Spider-Man. And Mr. Shorty there is just like, good Lord, dude. Like,
speed up. Yeah, you're holding me back.
I can't reach that or I can't get enough pull and jump to grab that jug overhead, and it's just not happening because, you're too short to grow. same sort of deal. There's so many different factors that you really can't make it.
Yeah.
So the new rule admirably tackles the problem of cost. Stand-up paddling, like many other water sports, can be expensive, and cutting out board-related transportation and purchase fees is a significant equalizer. Moreover, it sends a strong signal. The ICF sees the junior category as an entry point for the next generation, and they are willing to shake up the norm to make it more inclusive. However, the debate on whether uniform equipment will stifle competition remains unresolved. Unexpected consequence could be fewer junior participants in certain events, as young athletes with sponsor relationships are a preference for their own boards opt out.
There must be more races out there that if you're sponsored, you can join.
If they're not ICF.
Yeah. So be a non-ICF events. So this is not like as a junior, you're going to be professional and be entering professional races where these things don't matter. This is for the juniors where people are getting into it.
Yeah.
This is high-end junior races.
Yeah. Unexpected consequence would be fewer participants. In the long run, the rules strictness may need revisiting if results in more defections like Preston's, especially if these athletes are among the highest profile talents with promising careers ahead.
So people would, some of these events would get more interest if you have the high profile racers. Yep. And if the high profile racers aren't attending, then
you got a board sponsor that's sponsoring that athlete and they're going to be at that race, then maybe they also sponsor the race.
Yes, exactly.
Well, now, since they can't
sponsor that racer,
we're not sponsoring your race either.
Right? Yeah.
So, rules that aim for accessibility can still yield unintended outcomes. From a development standpoint, the idea of a equal board for all might attract new paddlers who were previously deterred by cost. Worthwhile goal for the ICF that wants the sport to grow globally. The organization must monitor how these regulations actually impact participation levels, sponsorship dynamics, and athlete satisfaction in the coming seasons. It is also important to note that the specifications of the One Design program are yet to be determined, leaving some athletes in limbo about how this new rule will be enforced in practice. For now, there are more questions than answers, and any immediate concerns, such as potential disadvantages for certain body types or the culture of innovation in the sport, remain unresolved. We have reached out to the ICF and associated individuals for comment, but have not received a response, leaving the community eagerly awaiting further clarity. Here's what we're going to do, but you think you would have figured all this out first, right? Should a standardized board requirement remain in place permanently, it might depend on how well the ICF can collaborate with racers, coaches, and board manufacturers to ensure that quality, safety, and fairness go hand in hand. One option could be a hybrid approach, allowing personal boards in some competitions while maintaining the One Design rule for specific junior categories or championships. That way, newcomers can still experience an affordable entry pathway, while more advanced junior racers maintain the freedom to refine their personal craft and progress at higher levels. It's like, the hybrid style. And then any of those newcomers that do start making it, then maybe they start to move on to a specific...
something bigger and better.
Board and brand, and then can join in the other ones as well.
Yeah.
The ICF's decision represents a pivotal moment for junior stand-up paddling. While One Design requirement addresses pressing cost concerns and promises a streamlined, equitable stage for all, it could dampen the competitive spirit and disrupt established athlete-sponsor relationships. The withdrawal of paddlers like Soren Preston is an early indicator of the policy's potential pitfalls. In navigating this new landscape, the ICF should remain open to dialogue and flexible in adapting the rule if it proves to discourage more juniors than it invites. Striking the right balance between affordability and the artistry of individualized equipment will be crucial for the healthy development of the sport and for securing the future of these young paddlers who represent its next generation of champions. Yeah, if you lose
I can,
10% and yeah. only gain 3%,
mm-hmm.
might not be. I can see both sides of it.
I see what they're struggling with. Yeah. I can see both sides of this. I can understand what the issues are.
I'd have to say the hybridization type.
They need to do something. So they need to have different classes, right? So a junior open, a junior closed, and so on, right? It's mm-hmm. they need to find some way that benefits everybody and keeps the higher end people still interested while making it an easy fit for new people to join the sport without nobody. If you're joining a sport and you have people so far advanced that you have zero chance of ever competing, you're going to lose interest pretty quick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they need to find some hybridization where they can get new people in, get interested, advance in the sport, and not hamper people who are higher skilled in sponsorships and they're really advanced in the sport.
Yeah. I think maybe it'd be something they have to grandfather in if they're going to that
mm-hmm. yeah.
that specific one size fits all sort of thing.
Yeah.
So if you're currently at that level where you're using your own specialized boards and sponsors and all that sort of stuff, but anybody new coming in, you know,
yeah,
after this year has to go, and then eventually it will all be one size fits all.
Yeah. And so you could even have different classes in the same sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like on any competition race and Muskoka X and whatever, you have single paddlers, you have double paddlers, you have different classes all competing
yeah.
on the same place. And so you are getting mixed in with the rest. And so maybe that's an option too, where you're still competing, but you're in a different weight class type thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everybody shoots off there, and then you got the hybrid, you got the standard one-size-fits-all group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your first, second, third. Then you got the not standard.
Yep.
First, second, third, and then the overall.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sort of deal. So, who knows? We'll see what happens.
Yeah,
keep watching it.
Be interesting to follow along.
As we were saying, there's that time of year where we're starting to think about paddling and getting plans.
Yeah, so
Ontario Parks.
Because we're Canada, we're going to talk about this one.
Yeah.
So
Ontario Parks, it's time of year you might want to start thinking about summer jobs. Ontario Parks is looking for students to work this summer. Check out ontarioparks.ca/careers for info. And maybe, just maybe, you'll be spending your summer working outdoors this year.
Yeah, so obviously if you're in Germany or wherever you do work, if you're a seasonal worker when you do these paddle sports and stuff, then look locally and there's lots of opportunities out there. We constantly see stuff, Canada, U.S., where they're hiring for different, people working in the backcountry and doing whatever in the sports. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah, there's lots of stuff out there. Obviously, we are more familiar with Ontario Parks here.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people that end up when they're in high school and that is what they do over the summer is they work for Ontario Parks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Park ranger.
Get to work outside.
Yeah.
Enjoy your summer. You're still
cleaning portages.
Yeah. Exactly.
And working at campgrounds.
So instead of working in a restaurant or something over the summer, if you're an outdoors person, so you're going to work at a Camp Pathfinder. You're going to work with Ontario Parks. You're going to be doing portage cleaning and dock building and
mm-hmm.
campsite cleaning and whatever, right? So it's your opportunity yeah. to spend your summer outside.
Go check out ontarioparks.ca and look under their careers. And if you're looking for a job, now's the time.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's not singled out to just people who live in Canada, Ontario. I've seen some of these jobs that are posted for whoever applies. If you come in from Australia, then apply for these jobs. And there's lots of...
The Rockies are huge
for
Australians.
Well, MKC, for their whitewater program, the few times that I've gone, like, it's a mix of people from all over the world who are paddle instructors, right? From, you know, Australia and Canada, U.S. It's very popular.
Very popular.
Mm-hmm.
This one's been making the rounds for the last couple days here. And then I was talking to you about different topics, and you said, hey, have you seen this one? And I have. And so we're going to talk about it. The Yampa River, northwestern Colorado, runs free for almost all of its 300 miles before joining with the Green River in Dinosaur National Monument, bound for the Colorado River. Notably, the Yampa is one of the few western rivers that retains its natural hydrograph and is the last major free-flowing river in the Colorado River Basin. There's a film out by Oars, Friends of the Yampa, and American Rivers, which shows how conservation efforts can serve as a blueprint for protecting rivers both throughout the Colorado River Basin and beyond. Yampa is often touted as one of the best river floats in the West, with a scenic route through Yampa Canyon, Class 5 and 6 whitewater in Cross Mountain Gorge, and in a whitewater park in Steamboat Springs. But like all rivers, the Yampa is important far beyond its utility recreation. It contributes to about 17% of the Colorado River flows.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of water. And it also is the biggest contributor to the native fish population in the Colorado River system. Lindsay Marlowe, executive director at Friends of Yampa, says the native fish come all the way up from Lake Powell area to the Yampa River to spawn. There aren't any active threats to the river. There's no proposed dam, no big tangible big bad guy to point a finger at right now.
Right now.
By the time a big threat comes about, by the time we learn about it, it can be too late, says Mike Feibig from American Rivers. The folk that are actually looking at to dam, divert, or degrade a river have invested a lot of time and energy and politics into it. In A Guide to Fighting for Wild Rivers, Oars, American Rivers, and Friends of Yampa invite people with the ability to affect change for the Yampa on a rafting trip. It's relatively easy to tell a story when there's a special place and there's a clear threat to its future and a success story. That makes for a nice, well-packaged story. It's harder to tell that story when there's not a clear threat to the river, says Steve Markle, Vice President, Sales Marketing at Oars. The film came about as a way to share to a much broader audience that we've done with American Rivers and Friends of the Yampa, and I do feel like it's a model that is replicable, and we'd like to see what is happening on more rivers. So, yeah, as you were saying, we were chatting earlier, when you get these lobbyists saying, yeah, we need to put a dam here, and da-da-da-da.
Exactly.
They've spent 10 years already.
Millions of dollars, 10 years. They've put a lot of work and effort, and they're not going to go down without a fight because they've invested time and money and sweat and manpower to come up with a plan and environmental studies and all this stuff. They put the efforts in. And so you're going to be fighting an uphill battle. And when they do announce it publicly, it's if they've already spent the money and the time developing and looking, and now it's going to go to the public conversation period where they say, hey, we're looking at damming a portion of this river. This is what the plan is. I know in Canada they do these public they roll it out to the public, and there's a question period. People can ask questions and so on. By that time, it could very well be too late to change the course of that action. Whereas here on the Yampa River, they're unaware of any current threats. Who knows? Somebody might be already looking at damming the river. They've already started the preliminary investments in time and money and environmental studies, but nobody's aware of it yet. So it's a good time to get in there and get your foot in the door to say, hey, this is a resource. This is a park. This should be a protected area. Let's plan this out. And so politically and environmentally, it seems like it would be an easier slam dunk if you're not fighting big money, who some corporation that wants to build a new dam and enlarge their portfolio of hydroelectric projects across the Midwest and so on. And so if they can get in there early and protect it early, there's nobody to fight back, and you're not fighting big money to convince politicians to protect it and ban future development and damming and mining and so on.
Mm-hmm. Story of preventative action told in Guide to Fighting for Wild Rivers aims to challenge the idea that an environmental story isn't compelling until it's a catastrophe.
Exactly.
And tackle the question of how to get people to care about a river before it's too late. The Yampa is a source of fresh water, a haven for native fish, and one of the last western rivers to retain its natural wild topography. The film proposes that the way to protect the wilderness on rivers like the Yampa is to personalize it by bringing people out on the river to experience it themselves. When I was up last May in Temagami, I went out fishing with Alex Mathias there, and he's talking about back a few years previous where they wanted to start doing different things up in the area and developing and all that. And his big thing was they're having these meetings, but none of them actually have seen the areas they're talking about.
Okay, yeah.
So he said, you have to bring them up here.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at a map. You can look at a picture. But until you're actually up here.
Unless you stand
and
on.
And see it. Yeah. Boots on the ground, as they say.
Yep, boots on the
ground. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Yep.
And once he got people up there, and they started looking at all these, the old growth and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, yeah.
I see what you're talking about.
I see what you're talking about here now, right?
Yeah.
And this is the same sort of thing that they're doing down there now, right? So they're bringing people out on the river.
Mm-hmm.
Say, hey, here's the river. Why do you not want to protect this?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? I think inherently as a human, you can only worry about so much in life. It's a natural tendency to worry about the things you know, says Marlowe from Friends of Yampa. To get people to care, to truly care enough to act, it is important to bring them to those spaces, not just to show them, but to immerse them in the beauty that these spaces can bring and what this trip is. And that's what this trip is. The Yampa River trips are part of the Yampa River Awareness Project, which originated in 2008 in response to a possible pump back on the river to the Front Range. The people invited on the trip included politicians, river managers, scientists, artists, and journalists, potential key players in the future of river advocacy. One of the most important aspects of the trip is that you can bring people from different sides of the aisle, different walks of life, out on a river, and it's much more civilized to disagree face to face. You know, it's easy to disagree online or on boardrooms, but when you're on a river enjoying a place like the Yampa, rivers just have a way of bringing people together and having a more constructive conversation. It's easy. I mean, you watch the politicians do it all the time.
Yeah.
On the politics channel there we get, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting there on either side of the room back and forth. You're full of crap. You're a different type of crap. Yeah, it's like, and nothing gets done.
Yeah.
But when you're out there and you say, no, remember yesterday when you saw all those fish?
Mm-hmm.
If you guys are not going to protect this, all that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, they little conversations like that, right? In A Guide to Fighting for Wild Rivers, the filmmakers have found and outlined a blueprint for protecting wild spaces based on what has worked in the past in a 6-point plan. First point is to be proactive as threats to the river like proposed dams and diversions are often harder to stop when the movements behind them are fully formed. Second, the film recommends teaming up as multiple organizations working together have more resources. Following steps include connecting decision makers to the river, building special moments and memories around the river, and sharing the stories of time on the river with the public. The sixth and final step is to simply keep it wild. Multi-day river trip might be an effective way to create and inspire advocates for the river, but realistically, that kind of trip isn't accessible to many, even most Americans. Not everybody can get out to these places, right? But that doesn't mean that they don't care about it, says Sarah Porterfield from Trout Unlimited in the film. You know, Wallace Stegner, he spoke about how wild places are really important, even if we only go to the edge and look in. The final aim of A Guide to Fighting for Wild Rivers is to share that slice of the Yampa River, a window into the wilderness, with the general public. We know we can only reach so many people in the form of getting them out on a river trip. The films are another way for us to share what we love about these places. So this film is out there, and you gotta, I fully agree with what they're saying, mm-hmm. is before anything happens, before anybody thinks of making something happen,
before that
get out there and start the protections.
Exactly.
Right? Because, I mean, you can't just say, let's protect this river. Okay, boom, protected. They've got to go through the whole,
it's an uphill battle.
and searches and everything beforehand as well. So get it started. Be proactive.
Like, I'm not anti-industry. I'm not anti-whatever. But I think there's lots of places where you can find resources without ripping holes in the ground and damming up rivers and affecting fish stocks and the natural migration of trout and salmon and so on. I think there's other places you can go first before we start having to tear apart the last vestiges of the planet to get the whatever we need, right?
Do we need to talk about old growth forests in Tuolumne?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're going to put a link on our Facebook page to this video. It's only a 10-minute long video, so check it out. And see what they're trying to protect and what their ideas are and stuff. And I got to think most people are going to go, you know what? Yeah, this is a good thing. We need to be doing this sort of stuff. When you are at the YouTube page, like I said, if you click on Oars and go to their main page and you click on videos, it shows all their latest videos. That's where this one is. There's also a trailer called The Dory Women of the Grand Canyon. It's just the trailer right now. It just came out. So while you're there, and there's a whole bunch of other videos, but check out that one. It looks like it's going to be a good one.
Cool.
So I got to think that's coming out pretty soon. Because I think the trailer for The Guide to Fighting Wild Rivers came out 3 weeks ago, and then that one just came out. Then the movie actually just came out a couple days back. So,
okay,
Dory Women of the Grand Canyon is coming too. So go check out, like I say, we're going to put this on our Facebook page there, and so you can take a peek at it, but definitely worth checking it out. Last thing, like I say, we got a couple shows coming up here. The Toronto Outdoor Adventure show is on February 21st to 23rd. We're going to be wandering that one. I'm actually speaking at 3:00 on the Saturday on the adventures and paddling stage. If you're not in Toronto, if you are in Vancouver, March 1st to 2nd, Calgary, March 29th to 30th, or Quebec, Montreal, March 22nd to 23rd. Outdooradventureshow.ca if you want information on any of those shows. Quiet Adventure Symposium, East Lansing, Michigan, our favorite, March 1st. Quietadventures.org. Looking forward to getting down to that one and seeing all our friends and listeners down there and checking out the Rabbit Show. I swear, I can't believe we have not tried to get a rabbit across the border as of yet.
Well, you know, there's going to be some research. You can't just go and hope for the best. You'd have to read up on it. You have to call customs.
You buy two of them?
What's possible? What can I do?
Yeah, I got two. No, those are my slippers. Those are my fuzzy bunny slippers.
Why are they moving?
Stop moving. Canucopia, Madison, Wisconsin, Alliant Energy Center, March 7th to 9th. I saw a post on the socials today that they got like 30,000 books getting ready to be mailed out to everybody that's bought tickets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 30,000 of them on skids, wow. Just ready to go to the post office.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of stamp licking.
Why are they mailing it?
They do over you.
People can pick it up at the door.
No, they mail that, your whole package.
That's a lot of money.
You're paying for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You get your book, you get your tickets, you get this, that, and the other thing, all these extra little bits.
I always think of these cost savings.
And that way, you can sit at home.
And daydream.
And you can go through your big book of...
Plan your route.
And plan... Well, plan...
There's going to be, what, 3 days of show?
Yeah. And I don't know how many dozens and dozens of speaking people.
Oh, yeah.
So you go through the day one.
You definitely have to map that out.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why you get the book.
Hmm.
So you can spend a week or two getting that all ready to go before you actually drive down there. Rutabaga.com for more information on Canucopia. Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, Nepean, Ontario, at the Nepean Sportsplex. April 26th and 27th, free parking and admission. AdventureOttawa.ca for more info. And the Paddle Sports Show, Strasbourg, France, in September 20th to October 2nd. That's a long one.
That's a big show, yeah. That's
ThePaddleSportsShow.com. I tell you, buddy, we need to go to France. I see Paris, I see France, I'm not wearing underpants.
Jeez. We need to look into some of the other shows. Like, there's a big one in Germany, right?
I think this is it.
Or you think this is the one?
Yeah. But yeah, the Paddle France. Expo, this is right on the border.
Oh, okay.
The Paddle Expo goes nowhere anymore. Their link goes nowhere. I'm thinking this is what it is. This is it now. They just made a couple of changes, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Hot diggity. Busy time of year, buddy.
It is. It's getting busy. Every weekend for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then it's April. Next thing you know, it's May. Next thing you know, Merry Christmas, buddy.
Yes, exactly.
Merry Christmas. Happy birthday. It's going to be August before we know it. I'm already sitting on Google Map. Every time I'm looking at all these bits of water.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, that looks like a great place to go paddling. And that looks like a great place.
There's where I can put in. There's where I can take out.
Yeah.
There's where I can park.
Looking for people to rent a canoe from for the day or a kayak from for the day. And it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And everything else that goes with it. I'm waiting to try the river raft, the log raft.
I want to do that.
And down the old Kitty-Yama River, baby. We're going. That's going to be like day three or something like that of our trip.
Yeah.
I'm going to video. Maybe I'll FaceTime you from there.
Yeah.
While I'm scooting down
that river. Are you actually
going
to do it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're doing it.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Right on. Do you sit or stand? I think you stand.
I think there's options for both.
Yeah.
But I'm standing, baby. I'm standing. I'm holding onto that rail. I'm going to have my camera mounted on my head. I'm going to have one around to the back of my head. Going to have one mounted to my chest.
There you go.
In case I go over, I'm going to get every angle.
This is how Sean died.
My shoe! No. It's going to be fun. We're looking forward to doing that one.
Excellent.
So. All right. You got nothing else, you say?
I do not have anything.
All righty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just Google us. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. And if you end up at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show or the Quiet Adventure Symposium and you do see us,
say hi.
Do not be shy. Come up and say hello. And we're always happy to chat with people. So other than that, I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.